Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today my guest is writer-director Frank Sabatella, whose new movie, The Shed, is a horror thriller from RLJE, and it's a different look on vampires, and it mixes in bullying, which I thought was a very interesting combination, and I can't wait to hear more about it. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
pretty good. How long did it take you to write this and get it made? Because this seems like a very, like an outdoor version of a one set type of movie, but some of the shots you get in here are awesome.
Oh, thank you. It took about 5 years of writing and pushing to get it made, I think. 5 or 6 years before finally locked in, I got the right producers on board, and we started really doing it. So about 5 years, yeah.
So how long did it take to actually shoot?
We had 17 shooting days over the course of a month. So we did about 3 weeks of pre-production, about a month of shooting, 17 days over that month, and then I think like 6 or 7 months, maybe more, of post-production.
So what inspired this approach to a vampire, shall we say, adventure?
The core of the story was written by a film school buddy of mine, Jason Rice, wrote a short about a vampire trapped inside of a tool shed. And I thought that little concept was really cool. And I started thinking about what could we do with that, and what would make that interesting, more interesting than it is. So I wanted to bring in the angle of the sort of struggling, neglected teenagers, and having the bullying concepts come in and the abuse aspects. I just started to feel like the vampire in the shed really is like a manifestation of all this outward negativity, but also at the same time, what would these characters do when they have something like that at their disposal? And how would that affect their relationships? How would that affect their status? And pretty much it went from there. And they started exploring all of that and crafting it together.
Well, I was impressed with some of the character development. Stan is very, very put upon. Dahmer is unhinged, to say the least. And my first impression of when Dahmer finds out what's going on, I said, are we going to have like a really crazy bullied kids version of Lost Boys here? And you totally went Night of the Living Dead instead. And shall we say the vampire inspired mayhem was delightful, and I had a special appreciation for it because it looked like there was a greater percentage of practical effects, especially with the original vampire in the woods. And I am a huge fan of practical effects. So talk about getting that all in line.
So I also am a huge fan of practical effects. I think they're just better. They look better. They feel better. And I think people respond better to them. So it was a big challenge for us to do everything practically because of our short shooting schedule. 17 days is not a lot, especially when you have stunts, effects, drama, etc. So I was working with Jeremy Salenfriend of Monster in My Closet Special Effects, and we were just coming up with ways to have very effective practical effects without blowing our budget and being able to get them through production. Now, there's a little bit of non-practical stuff. There's a few non-practical enhancements, which you sort of, sometimes you kind of have to do it. But it was important to me to really do as much as we possibly could practically without relying on computer-generated stuff, which I think no matter what never really looks good anyway.
Well, the effects with hiding some of the what you would normally put effects on by having them take place in the shed, I thought was a great moment, because your mind imagines half that stuff anyway being worse than what you'd actually see. And just the sound effects and the shed door slamming were hilarious, especially when the sheriff went in there. I swear I half expected her to go Egger at some point. When she started yelling the grandfather's name, Ellis, I just heard Egger. I'm like, no, wait.
Nice.
But
that's hilarious.
Talk about the, I guess, keeping the shed upright, because it looked like it took a lot of abuse before, you know, the end.
Well, we built that baby. So, you know, we pretty much just constructed it as we needed it, so we were able to do all the things that we needed to do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, the
is that the kind of question you answered, like about it being upright?
Well, sort of like the interior shots where you barely see Frank Whaley's vampire, and then just cutting back and forth between the dark and the light, to me was a very effective transition, because you have the shadows there, but you have little points of light. And they're supposed to keep the vampire away from the door, but maybe not.
Right.
And it's just the way it was set up to get the shots that you got, I thought was very creative.
Thank you. So me and my cinematographer, Matthias Schubert, it was important for us to have the shed have these pockets of light to give you a look, but also it needed big chunks of darkness where it's like, all right, well, where's he going to hide? Where's he going to be? And having that effect, that look, is what makes it so effective when you're inside the shed, because you're like, all right, I see the daylight, so it's okay over there, but it's so black behind there. You know what I mean? So you start, hopefully your mind starts creating, well, what's in the dark? Is it scary? What's going to pop out, et cetera, you know? So it was all very important to us early on to really create that lighting look inside of the shed.
Mm. Now, the one thing in the story that I thought was unique was there was no talk amongst the townspeople, amongst the students in the school, about something evil lurking in the woods. It's just been there. People have been ignoring it. Nobody knows about it. Joe Bain goes out to find out what's killing his rabbits, and whoops. And it's just part of the town. It's not mythologized. It's not rumored. There's no whispers about there's something in the woods. It's just there. And people ignore it because it doesn't directly affect them in the moment. And I thought that was so hilarious.
Right. Yeah, for me, I didn't want to have too much mythology, because then I didn't want people thinking more about the mythology than the present situations. And I think maybe I was kind of taking a page out of some of Stephen King's work, where you go into a Stephen King story and the horror, the phenomena, is typically just accepted as part of what's in that world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And
I think that's where I was going with that.
Cool. And the way you wrapped in the different, shall we say, challenges some of the different students were having. You've got the cliques, the ostracizing, the bullying, the actual abuse, in a unstable home life. And I thought having that balanced with the violence of a creature was well done, because you didn't downplay or overblow the situation that the kids were going through. It just happened. Some bullying was worse for others. Some home life was worse for a different one. And just having that not damage all of them in the same way, I thought was very well handled.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to create the sense that, every character in one way or another is coming from some sort of neglect or abuse or shame, and that those things inform who they are, and they all sort of react differently to the horror of the situation. And I wanted it to all feel real and believable. And I think this is the kind of stuff people genuinely go through. And I think that's what, aside from the vampire, obviously, but I mean, in real life, people deal with being shamed, being bullied, being abused, being neglected, etc. So I think bringing that reality into the story helps counterbalance the unreality of vampires.
Mm-hmm. I thought having an undercurrent of having your friends be there but then turn on you, I thought was a very real world view of how relationships just can change on a dime. Somebody you absolutely trusted for your whole life all of a sudden isn't the person you've known, and you have no idea what happened or what to do about it. I thought that was a nice little emotional surprise in there.
Thank you. I think a crisis situation can bring out people's true colors. And a lot of times that could be surprising, for better or for worse.
So with this movie, what are your plans for it beyond VOD and digital? Will there be a home video release, like a Blu-ray with plenty of commentary track, I hope?
Yeah, I believe RLJ is our distributor. They're planning, I believe, a Blu-ray release. I just don't know when that will be, but I'm fairly certain we'll do a cool director's track and director's commentary and producer commentary, and hopefully it'll be filled with lots of awesome stuff to make everybody happy.
Yes, commentary tracks and deleted scenes or bloopers, those make Blu-rays A-list on my list. So push for those. And
I agree. I love that stuff.
You'll like make me totally happy.
For sure. I'll tell them. I'll be like, look, I spoke to Summer and she really wants this stuff, so we're going to have to do it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Now, do you have any new horror or sci-fi on the horizon?
I'm in the early stages of developing my next concepts. I'm potentially planning to create a feature off of a short film that I did called The House That Cried Blood. And I have another story that I'm in the very early stage of writing. I'm really just starting to put the concept together of two girls experimenting with like witchcraft that are conjuring an evil entity for revenge, but the entity turns on them and horrific things happen.
Oh, that's never good.
No, typically not.
Cool. Now, is that short film available online for people to check out now?
Yeah, totally. If people go on Vimeo, they can search for Sideshow Pictures. And if they find the Sideshow Pictures page, there's all the short films that I've done are there, including The House That Cried Blood.
Cool. Is there anywhere else people could find you online, like Twitter or Instagram?
I'm on Instagram. You can find me at Frank Sabatella.
Cool. Well, Frank, I would like to thank you for putting out such a fun yet serious horror thriller, The Shed.
Thank you.
The Shed is available this week, November 15th, from RLJ Films. We'll have links to places you can watch it, usually your typical VOD locations. But we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Hi, guys. This is Tom Allison, and I play Tree on Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest right now is Hannah Race, who is one of the stars of the new indie horror Echoes of Fear. Hi, Hannah. How are you today?
Hey, Summer. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, is Echoes of Fear your first dive into horror?
It is, but I do have horror experience in my formal training. I take Clue Gulager's film acting workshop, and of course, he's huge in the horror genre,
mm-hmm.
and he writes our scenes for us, and we do a lot of horror scenes in that class.
So do you like horror or the prospect of acting in different horror movies?
Yeah, I love it. I've loved horror since I was 4 or 5 years old, and I stumbled across A Nightmare on Elm Street. and I became obsessed with Freddy Krueger. So I've always been into horror. Chiller Channel was always on in my house.
But, nice.
Yeah, and I would definitely love to work in horror more in the future.
Cool. Yeah, Chiller. I loved Chiller back in the day. I wish it was still around, but we have Shudder now, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Now, Echoes of Fear has been on the film festival circuit for a little over a year. It's won a lot of awards, including Shriekfest's Best Supernatural Horror, and it is just now hitting theaters and VOD. What... For you, you played Steph, who's Alyssa, the lead character's best friend, and you get caught up in some shenanigans in her late grandfather's house. And I want to avoid as many spoilers as I can, but this is a really creepy movie. How did you come?
Thank you.
How did you come to Echoes of Fear?
Well, through the acting workshops that I take, I've met tons of great actors, and it's really a great networking thing as well. I was referred to a table reading, which was not for Echoes of Fear. It was for another movie. And the writer for that had me in mind for Lo and Brian. He's friends with Lo and Brian, and he referred me to them. And he called me one day and just said, "Hey, I think you're kind of perfect for this role, so can I send your information along?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, of course." So I can't remember whether I called Brian or he called me, but we set up the audition and the rest was history. I had to go back for a couple callbacks, but
What was it about the movie or the role that appealed to you most?
I loved Steph right from the beginning because I felt like she was kind of a kindred spirit. You know, she's a lot like me. I like to believe I'm a really supportive and loyal friend like she is, but she also has, even though she's very grounded, she's very open-minded and very into the supernatural and willing to kind of explore the beyond, you know, and I'm very much like that. I've had my own experiences. And so it just felt so real for me. I feel like I just got her. It can be kind of difficult to play those roles when you're so similar to the character because you have to find those little nuances where you can create a moment that's not you, you know? But I liked that challenge too.
So what was your approach to working through some of the more scary scenes? Because there's most of the effects in here, I believe, are all practical. The makeup, the special effects, all of it. And some of it looked kind of, shall we say, messy.
Yeah. I wasn't there for a lot of that, unfortunately, because in the film, Steph is not having the same experiences as Alyssa. She's just, it's not as real for her. But, yeah, I'm trying not to give anything away as well. There is, you know, the climax of the film. I'm definitely there with Alyssa. And I don't know, to prepare for that, that's just acting, you know? There's no real way to describe that. I just had to put myself there and kind of block everything else out in life and think how I would feel if this was really happening to me in the moment.
Cool. So did you get to watch or just be on the set for some of the other scenes that Alyssa was doing with the, shall we say, the entities and the evildoers?
Man, no, I did not.
Such
a bummer. Yeah, I got to hear a lot of stories on set about the things that happened the day before or whatever, but I wasn't there for those, and yeah, that was a bummer.
Well, if you were to get another lead role in a horror movie, what would you want to experience or to get from that experience?
Oh, man. I'd love to exercise my screaming because, man, I have a really good one, and I didn't let it out in this film. Steph makes the noises in the film. Don't want to give anything away again, but no screaming. I never could just let out that high-pitched scream, and I would love to be able to do that. I would love to play a character like Alyssa.
So you want to be in the middle of the terror, but still trying to keep it enough, to keep it together enough to figure out what's going on, but somewhere in there let out a couple of really, really good screams.
That'd be great. I would love it. Can we make this happen?
I will do my best. I'm sure that Asylum and Blumhouse may have a few things on the table in process that, you know, it's like, hey, we need a new scream. Let's try Hannah.
Yes, yes. I promise it's a good one.
Awesome, awesome. So what other promotions are you doing for Echoes of Fear? Did you do any like Q&As or actual festival appearances?
I was at the Shriek Fest festival last year. There was no Q&A there. But this year at the LA premiere screening, there was a Q&A afterwards. I participated in that. That was a lot of fun. And now I'm doing interviews, which is kind of my interview period right now.
Awesome. Well, hopefully you're having fun with those.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I love it.
Nice. So after Echoes of Fear, what are you working on? What are you looking at doing?
Well, I'm currently working on television, which is, you know, a complete turnaround. But it is a group of three girls. I am the lead. And it's kind of a girl power film. These girls are taking revenge out on one of their exes. But, I mean, not in a horrific way. Definitely in a comedy way. I'm having a lot of fun with that because that's so different for me. I'm usually doing drama or, like, in Echoes of Fear, the horror, you know? So I'm enjoying playing around with that.
What do you like most in the roles you choose? Is it trying something you haven't done before or getting to stretch something you're familiar with into something better?
Well, I feel like at this point, I'm not too far along in my career, you know. I almost feel, I don't want to say typecast, but I do typically get the nice role, and I would love to play something opposite of that because it's very cathartic. I've done that in my workshop. I've played the complete opposite of myself. And it's almost, it's easier in a way, but it's harder in a way. I want more of that. It gets a little bit monotonous playing the nice girl.
Oh, I've heard that from a lot of actors over the years. Like, you know, they have like that clean cut, you know, friendly, affable, supportive, you know, friend next door or, you know, best friend, college roommate. And they're like, no, I want to be something meaty. And everybody says, I want to play the diabolical, the schemer, something that's totally different from what I look like. And it sounds like that's a common thing. So we need to spice up the good guy and good girl next door trope into, maybe not.
Yeah, I would love it. I mean, people tell me, well, you just have such a nice face. You look so nice. And I'm like, I can be mean. I can be really mean. Me out here.
We have so many examples from horror and science fiction and fantasy where the person who is the charming one is the true evil in the story.
Yes. Yeah, that's always a nice twist.
Okay. So we need to find you some roles like that. Cool, cool. Well, the short film you're working on, where will that be found? Is that finished or is that still in progress?
That's still in progress. I've been filming on that all week. I have a little break today, and then we resume tomorrow. But I know the goal is festivals, and probably next year.
So what else is out there that people can see you in? Anything online, web series, short films, other films, indie films?
Unfortunately, like with many people, projects aren't always finished, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have much besides Echoes of Fear. It's really my first completely finished out there film. But I'm hoping that soon I get more out there. I know the one I'm working on currently will be out for sure.
Cool. Now, you mentioned working with scripts in Clue Gulager's workshop. Do you ever have the inkling that you might want to write something too?
Yes, actually. One day I showed up to class and the person, my partner, my scene partner, didn't show up. And he was like, well, then you got to roll with the punches in this business. Go write your own scene. You have 30 minutes to write and then perform the scene. Oh, my gosh. My gut just dropped. I was like, in college I would write essays, but that's it. Very formal essays, you know. And I was like, I'm not going to say no to Clue. He's Clue. So I go over and I start, like, scribbling away. And I just kind of went with my gut. My gut was to write something that kind of flips the roles. It had nothing to do with the scene that I had prepared for, but I wanted to kind of flip gender roles. I don't know. It just kind of came to me. So I wrote a scene where a girl's jogging down the street and she's talking to her boyfriend on the phone. She seems great. And she gets another line. So she takes the phone call and she's real friendly on that phone call too. And she gets another phone call and she's really friendly on that one. It turned out really good. And Clue really liked it. He liked the direction that I took, and that made me feel really good. And it gave me a little bit of confidence as far as writing. I thought, yeah, I would maybe pursue that in the future.
So what kind of stories do you think you would tell? More comedy, more horror, more action? Because we need more kick-ass women in action movies. That's just me.
Man, yeah, you're kind of talking me into action. I think I'd probably lean toward comedy. And, of course, with my, like, longtime love of horror, it might tend to go there. Maybe, like, a comedy horror would be a great middle ground for me. But, action sounds like, ooh. I loved doing, that was one of my favorite things about Echoes, was the stunts, really, that Trista and I were pulling ourselves through. It's a lot of fun.
So we need a horror comedy with a couple of action set pieces in it, and you're going to write that. You're going to write that. Cool.
I guess I better get to studying writing.
Well, I'm sure somebody out there has something like that, either in progress or already written, that they haven't been able to sell, because that's one thing I've seen over the years. I watch way too much television and way too many movies. There seems to not be a full understanding or a full grasp of how to market movies that aren't perfect pigeonholes. You know, something that straddles a line between two or even three genres. Marketing kind of goes, what do I do with this? And it falls through the holes and nobody sees it. And it's such a shame because a lot of them are really, really good. So I'd like to help change that if I could. And if you're going to write one, I'll push it.
Thank you so much, Summer. Now the pressure's on. No pressure, right?
No pressure whatsoever. So other than continuing to study with Clue, what are you up to? How do you spend your time, and do you spend it on social media at all?
I do spend quite a bit of time on social media, more than I would like to admit. I've wasted many hours on social media. I'm more of a viewer, though. I need to post more. I'm a social media lurker, I guess. But my free time is spent. I have a home that I just got earlier in the year, so I've been doing a lot on the home and the yard. And I have a family, so I spend as much time as I can with them. I'm trying to juggle all these different things. I also have a full-time job as a preschool teacher. So
nice.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot, but it's all very fulfilling. I'm very happy. I'm in a really good spot.
Cool. Well, wish you luck with everything around Echoes of Fear. It's a pretty fun movie. It's appropriately creepy. I'm a big fan of practical special effects, so I was really happy to see that. Where would my listeners be able to find you on Twitter or something or Facebook?
I'm on Instagram as Hannah Reese Official, and I'm also on Facebook as Hannah Reese Official.
Okay, I'll have links to that. Again, thank you for sharing your time today with promoting Echoes of Fear. Like I said, I hope it gets you the work in horror comedy that you're dreaming of, and if not, go write it.
Thank you so much, Summer. I will do that.
And
thanks
we'll
for having me.
No problem. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, welcome to more Slices Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest right now is Renee Goodhue, who is a visual effects and movie makeup goddess who is known for makeup effects and visual effects in independent horror films, and you know how close that is to my heart. So welcome, Renee.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, the latest movie coming out featuring your skills and expertise is Echoes of Fear, the Avnet Bradley's Festival feature winner that is coming out, I believe, November 15th or November 22nd.
Yeah, I think it's coming out this week, I know for sure. And then it will be going to, like, you know, obviously, like, on video and stuff like that. So I believe, though, it's happening actually this week or the next couple of days.
Cool. I will make sure I have the right dates for that so people can go check it out. But your effects, especially the makeup, were, to me, the standout part of that movie because some of them, there's a subtleness to it that adds to the creepy factor. And that to me is just classic horror necessity. How did you get into doing makeup and effects, and what is your favorite part of doing that?
Well, I got into makeup effects like early on in my career. I was kind of going to go into doing only lab work, which is basically just in the shops, kind of working, making prosthetics, body parts, things like that. For my first 2 years, that's actually what I did, and I kind of jumped around. And then at some point, I decided that I wanted to do more on-set work as well, so I kind of combined both, and then my love of horror, and that's kind of where I brought in, you know, both aspects of the field. So now I've been doing it now for about 7 years, and I can't remember what the second question was you asked.
Which parts of it are your favorite of doing the effects, the makeup, the practical effects?
The thing that I love about special effects makeups, and which I learned from early on, was that there is no one way to do anything. It's kind of like a trial and error. So I always tell people if they're trying to get special effects or they want to do it, I'm like, learn everything because there is not one way to create something that will work. And I love that aspect and that element of it because it's always challenging. It's always something new. It's very rare unless it's like body parts or, you know, heads or replicas, something like that, where it's the same process for the most part over and over again. But anything that's like new, someone will come like, oh, I need this, but I want it to look like this, but it needs to be supernatural, but I don't want it to be, it's always something different. So I love being challenged in that way in the makeup field and making it, you know, come to life. And then when you, obviously you see it on the screen or something, usually people come up to you and be like, oh my gosh, it's exactly what I imagined. And that's like a really great feeling.
So which films influenced you to explore this as a career? Because like I said, some of the attention to detail in some of the scenes in Echoes of Fear, there's the makeup, the shading, some of the, I guess they were prosthetics. There was a creepy factor to them that really added to the ambiance of the scenes.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm such a huge horror buff. So, I mean, it's so hard for me to pick individually. Like, The Exorcist was obviously my first favorite film that I watched from Dick Smith's work. Can't go wrong. But I tell people, they're like, oh, it's your favorite. And I was like, gosh, I don't know, because I have so freaking many, and I've seen literally every horror movie there is to be, like, out there. So it's really hard, but, you know, there's some, obviously, some players that I really like. As far as Brian's, the creation of the ghost and some other, like, elements we wanted to do, Brian was very specific, and, you know, he came to me, and we kind of sit down, and we bounce ideas. Like, I'll ask him, like, what he wants and what he likes, and then I'll kind of, like, give him my input as well and say, well, I maybe don't like this, but I think it'd be good to do this. And so we kind of collaborate with the lighting and, like, all these factors in the scene to kind of come to a happy medium where we're like, yeah, that's, you know, this is what we like. This is going to be great. This is going to work. So it's always a collaborative effort between the director and myself, and trying to figure out what they want. But specifically for this, he was really, really specific on what he wanted. Actually, the ghost makeup is a full body makeup that was actually done by hand each time. So we didn't do prosthetics or anything like that. Brian now was like, well, for the next one, I was like, yeah, we're going to do like a suit maybe or something else. But for this one, we basically, he'd found a texture that I did, a small piece of texture actually I found that I did on another project, and he's like, I love this, and he's like, now let's do it full body, and I was like, what? So thankfully I had an assistant that came on board, and we just kind of each day, it was about an 8 to 9 hour makeup that we did head to toe on her, so, and colored and airbrushed over that. So it was quite intense makeup for Leif, who was the actress, but she was such a trooper. It was amazing. So it turned out great.
So every time she had to appear on screen as the ghost, you guys had to do makeup on her head to toe each time?
Each time, yeah. So
wow.
I can't remember because it's been a while. But yeah, so every day, you know, we try to schedule as best as we can, you know, all per scenes. But for the most part, yeah, each time we had to do her makeup, it would have to be done from scratch, head to toe, and then airbrushed and painted and colored and set every time. So she was such a trooper. She would, like, you know, sometimes people get really antsy and become, like, very, like, uncomfortable in these types of very long makeups for obvious reasons. But Leif was amazing. She brought her headphones, and she would put them in and sit down, and I'd be like, do you need anything? And she'd be like, hey, just on hour, you know, 4 or 5, I want a coffee break, and that's it. And I was like, all right. So I was like, good for you. Because I was like, I don't know if I could do that. But yeah, it's amazing. But each time was from scratch.
What part of doing the makeup is your favorite? Is it coming up with a look or a texture or a design, or is it the actual applying of what you've been testing with and seeing if that works for the directors or the DPs?
Yeah, I like, you know, the process, the pre-production process of collaborating. Like I said, I do a lot of research, you know, we do a lot of, like, images and colors and references and things before we even start on, you know, getting a whole design put together. So by the time I've kind of done that, I'm like a little bit drained by that point. I'm just ready to kind of get the pieces or get the makeup going. So it's always my favorite process. Even people will ask me, they're like, when you do 8 hour makeups or 7 hour makeups, like, aren't you exhausted? Cause you usually just work straight through them. And I'm like, no, because I love every time, even though it's the same makeup, I love the gradual progression of seeing, like, people evolve, like, into their characters, or, you know, whether it's scary, whether it's a creature, whatever it is. So my favorite is definitely the application, when you see it and then everyone gets to look at it and be like, oh my God, that's so cool. So definitely the application is the fun part.
Do the actors talk to you about how seeing themselves in that type of makeup helps them become the monster they need to be?
Absolutely. That's by far my favorite part that I got into doing makeup, actually, is because I love, no matter, honestly, whether it's like sometimes like character makeups or period stuff, or if it's monster or whatever that may be, it's so funny because about halfway through the process, you'll start seeing a different side to them. Like they start to become their character, which I love because you're doing your job well then. I mean, so they'll start to like change the way they move and the way they speak. And like, it's just very funny how it helps them so much get into character. And I really like, it's very appreciative as an artist to like see that happen.
What's been your most favorite design to come up with, to implement, to actually apply in something recent you've done?
I don't know about what. It's so hard to tell people. It's so hard because things become a blur after a while when you keep jumping around on different stuff. But recently I had this this piece. This is like, it's not a horror makeup, but it was a headpiece to this whole like cybernetic headpiece for a Jimmy Eat World music video, and like it came last minute, and he was like, "I want this stuff," and I was like, "What? Like, how are we gonna do this? Like, how are we gonna make up this whole makeup plus the headpiece plus everything else in like, you know, a couple days?" So for me, I loved it because I was like, "Okay, I just need to really think and strategize correctly to get this done in time." And so I sculpted pieces and molded pieces and placed them together, and then we did his makeup as well, and it turned out so cool. It was so cool. But it's one of those things where you don't think, you just act. And as long as you know what you're talking about, like, and you kind of know your knowledge on things, you just cross your fingers and hope it all comes together. And it does usually. You're like, hey.
Cool. Is that video out yet? Is that something people can check out on YouTube?
Yeah, it is. It's out right now. It's for his new album. And it's like this cybernetic, I have to remember the name off the top of my head, but it's his first new album, Surviving, but it's the only music video that's has like a cybernetic cyberpunk like element to it. But yeah, it's super cool music video. So
well, I'll include a link to that. But for you as a makeup artist, a designer, an effects person, what would you consider to be the ideal project you would want to work on?
Oh, gosh, that's so challenging. I always tell people in the long run, obviously, I would love to be working on like a big horror element. I mean, I don't, anything that's like American Horror Story is just like, that's like, I love the elements of having, it combines like period makeups as well as horror makeups as well as character makeups. For me, that's what I'm passionate about. I love period makeups if it's beauty. I love character stuff if it's like prosthetics, and I love horror elements if it's gore and blood and all that. So ideally, it would be great to have something like that in the long run, you know, as far as like a film or TV show. But I always tell people, I kind of go like by like, you know, directors like Del Toro, Tarantino, things, people like that, like in the long run, where I'd be like, yes, I would love to design or create that for you. So yeah, any types of shows like that, any types of work combines all three elements. I really enjoy that aspect to makeups or films or whatever it may be.
Do you prefer films to television, or they're equally as much fun for you?
They're equally as much fun. I work on some TV show stuff, and then I also work doing film stuff, and then, you know, indie stuff. So a little bit of everything across the board. I all think it's great. Like I said, I just, ideally, I'm such a big, you know, like fan of having, you know, these transformations take place. If it's beauty makeup, I love the period stuff because you get to transform them. If it's character, you transform. If it's horror, you get to do all the cool like horror stuff with it. So as long as it has like those elements involved, I would be okay doing either one. I love all three. It's so hard to pick.
Because I think there's a new show on now called Evil, I think, that has had,
oh, really?
That has had some interesting little things in it. I'm like, okay, where'd that come from?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I think, is it CBS or ABC? I can't remember. I think it's CBS. It's a priest and a skeptic are investigating, shall we say, possessions and determine.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. It was like, look forward to maybe seeing some of your stuff on one of those shows, or maybe, yeah, are we having a new American Horror Story next year? Have they renewed it yet?
I don't know. I know they did this year. I mean, I know they account this year, but I'm pretty sure there is next. I know there's next year for sure. I'm not sure about after that, though. So we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. So I guess you've got some stuff coming up later that you can't talk about, but wish you luck on a lot of on having a lot of things to work on, because it sounds like you are absolutely loving what you're doing. And from what I've seen of your work so far, it's really, really amazing.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
So where can people find you online, Renee, if they want to keep track of your next dive into horror?
Yeah, I go between either my Instagram or also my website as well. My website is just my name. It's www.renee, but it's R-E-N-A-E, and then goodhue.com. And then for my Instagram, it's makeup by, and then the little underscore, and then Renee again.
Cool. Well, we'll include links to all of that. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah,
you sharing
sharing
your passion for effects makeup.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for my listeners, if you want to check out the 9-hour head-to-toe makeup job Renee was talking about, the movie is Echoes of Fear, which is available on digital and on demand. I believe it's November 15th. I'll have to correct it. Make sure I have the correct date so you can set it on your schedules. But again, Renee, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
This is Stephen Kilpatrick, host of Tales to Terrify, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
As we said, both movies are available now on digital and video on demand. Check them out if you can. They are very, very different in tone. The Shed is more action, more, shall we say, snarky. And there's a little bit of more horror fun going on in The Shed. And I think a lot of people will like The Shed. The attention to detail in the behaviors of some of the quote-unquote grown-ups is expected. It falls into a certain pattern of behavior, but it's also refreshing to know that such behavior persists no matter what happens, even in the face of vampires. And Frank Whaley's performance as the vampire, as he gets more into his vampire nature after having been initially turned, is a lot of fun. He begins to, shall we say, experience his anger in a different way. And you have to wonder, what made him so angry? And then you go, oh yeah, small town. Everybody's in your business. And the mayhem is well worth the wait. We also have Echoes of Fear, which has a very, very different pace and tone to it than The Shed. It's more of an atmospheric ghost story, a mystery underneath everything that makes you question what's real and what's not. And Renee's work on the ghost is impressive. When you see it for yourself, it's very impressive. The story narrative of Echoes of Fear seemed to slow down too much for my tastes, but this type of horror falls right in line with a lot of the other slow burn thrillers with dangers, supernatural, and mundane, threatening our main characters. So both of them should be out by now. So go check them out when you have the time. If you have any questions or comments about any of the interviews or reviews we've done recently, please feel free to call. The number is 602-635-6976 or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Player FM. And you can leave a review for Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. Let folks know that you are enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can check us out on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And once again, big shout out to Neil for keeping up with the articles and the news and the interviews on Facebook for us. Thank you, sir. And we also have the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by. Check out our other interviews. Check out our reviews. The team puts together various Netflix and theatrical releases. And some of these indie releases, too. We have video reviews. We have written reviews. Check those out and weigh in with your own opinions of the films. I'd like to thank everyone who's helping support these efforts here. Slice of Sci-Fi, Babylon Podcast, Writers After Dark, Charlie Jade, all of them still up and running, still available for your perusal, thanks to your donations. If you want to help support the geek efforts here, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi, or if a monthly pledge is not in your budget commitment right now, go ahead and use the PayPal link to send a few bucks every now and then. The link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. I'd like to also thank the geek rock band Sci-Fried for providing the theme music for this show. You can find them over at sci-fried.bandcamp.com. But that'll do it for this episode. I want to thank everyone for listening. Remember, it's coming up on Deathscribe time. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.